The Holding Court podcast is powered by Fundraising University Ohio. Fundraising University Ohio offers a variety of fundraising efforts that help basketball teams run profitable, effective, and fast-paced fundraisers designed to raise the most money in the shortest amount of time to reach their fundraising goals. Fundraising University Ohio is locally owned and operated, and with their six-step blitz system, will help your team maximize profits. As a former basketball coach himself, Brent Maxwell will sit down and help you pick, plan, strategize, and execute your fundraiser, which will allow you as a coach to devote more time to the other aspects of your program. If you're looking to take your fundraising efforts to the next level, contact Brent Maxwell at bmaxwell@fundraisingu.net or 740-501-8946 to learn more. Welcome to Holding Court, presented by the Ohio High School Basketball Coaches Association. Join hosts Adam Hall and Walt Serrato as they sit down with some of the biggest names in Ohio high school basketball and beyond. This show and all of our shows are available to listen to completely free anywhere that you can find podcasts. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Let's get to it.
Hello, it's Adam Hall here with my co-host Walt Serrato, and we are excited to be joined by John Fiesel, head boys basketball coach at Olentangy High School and current vice president of the Ohio High School Basketball Coaches Association. Coach Fies, thank you for joining us, and welcome to the Holding Court podcast.
Glad to be here.
So guys, before we get started, you know, we're coming off a big event here in Cleveland. Just finished up the women's Final Four. Just your thoughts on the Final Four this year. John, go first.
Well, it was great for women's basketball. I know that. I've actually been in women's basketball longer than I've been in men's basketball. And it's great to see the excitement and the people watching. And it's about time. I mean, it's been a great game for years. And it's about time that people started taking notice of it.
Well,
yeah, I mean, Coach Fies, you put it very well there. I mean, just great for the game of basketball. And, you know, just you think about all the 6, 7, 8, 9, 10-year-olds in our country right now, and hopefully beyond even, that have been watching this season and really the last couple of seasons, and what that's going to create for the next generation. That's pretty exciting and pretty special. Now, I mean, you might have, you know, 9 or 10-year-old youth coaches right now that are losing their mind when, you know, you got a kid trying to step back 3 from 30 feet, but we'll work through that as coaches. So,
well, we all have that from Steph Curry on the boys' side. So, I mean, the runners in the lane and the 90-foot 3. So,
yeah, that's what we're there for, right? That's what coaches are there for.
Yeah. That's why I'm bald.
Yeah, but no, guys, I would echo those comments. I mean, Cleveland did it right. It was a tremendous atmosphere Friday night, today. Obviously I think the outcome wasn't what everybody was maybe hoping for, but hats off to South Carolina. They're really good. And Iowa they couldn't rebound the ball. And, you know, in that third quarter, they just missed a ton of just open shots. And that allowed South Carolina to stretch that lead. But nonetheless, it was a great atmosphere. Great for Cleveland, great for women's basketball. And why we're talking about Final Fours, you know, we just finished our Final Four, our boys' Final Four here a couple weeks ago, John. And to be quite honest, it just isn't what it used to be, you know, at the state tournament. You know, attendance seems to get worse each year, and the quality of games aren't always what you would expect to see at the state level. The atmosphere surrounding the state tournament is also not what it used to be. And now with the OHSAA expanding to 7 divisions, that Final Four experience as we know it for teams, communities and fans, just it's not going to look the same. Take a few minutes here and share your thoughts on what you have observed with the state tournament over the last 2 years, and then talk to us about the decision to go from 4 to 7 divisions in basketball starting next year. And, you know, what does the state tournament potentially look like with 7 divisions?
Well, I think the 7 divisions is going to try to bring back that community feeling to the Final Four, or not just the Final Four, but the championship games, I should say. I think that that's part of the reason that they're wanting to expand, is to bring in some of the community-based teams back into the championship games, and hopefully, you know, draw a few more people to the games. I mean, I know it's going to happen, and I'm more of a guy who's if it's going to happen, then let's take it positively. And you know, in 1971, when they went, you know, after 47 years, went from two divisions to three divisions, I would imagine there were coaches that were screaming from the rooftops that we don't need three divisions. And I would imagine 26 years later, when they went in 88, when they went to four divisions, there were same amount of coaches saying the same thing. And, you know, now we're going to go, you know, to seven divisions. And I would think that we got some coaches that are upset about it. And, but I think it's going to try to expand the game and get more people to that experience of the Final Four or the championship game, I should say. You know, it's something I think they're trying to grow the game and have more people experience the championship of winning a championship in the state of Ohio, and just not the same old teams. It's something that I think we're going to have to live with and grow.
So, Coach, let's stay in the present here for a few minutes and talk about some of those hot topic issues that are facing our game today in Ohio. And let's start with the RPI system that is now in place. I was just coming off our first season with it, that was used to seed teams in the OHSAA tournament. What led to that decision to move forward with the RPI system, and how was the formula developed? Because, you know, in all honesty, I don't think coaches have a problem with using the RPI system for tournament seeding. I think the issue lies with the formula itself and how that came to be.
Again, it's change, and not everybody's on board with change. And I think that in Central Ohio, most of us coaches like it, especially when we get to a point where we have four teams in Olentangy School District, and half the coaches in the Central District, not half of them, but some of the coaches in the Central District don't know which team is which, or what, you know, sometimes we would get the votes to be in the top 10 and we weren't a top 10 team, because they would be confused with us or Liberty or Orange or Berlin. And I think that this takes all the mistakes out of it. It takes all the other stuff out of it and the guesswork. And I think I personally like to click on that thing after my game on Friday night and see where I'm seated, going into the Central District draw. The numbers, and again, I've said this at the many meetings to some of our coaches, it's not something that's going to be perfect the first year. And I think that everybody wanted perfect the first year, and it's not going to happen. It's got to be more like a stone where we're sanding it down and making it perfect. We're going to change some numbers this year, hopefully get those numbers to reflect playing teams in your own division, not other divisions, and hopefully over a few years, we'll be able to get this thing smoothed out to where everybody's mostly happy with it, because it's going to be here. And, you know, I know change is something that's hard to deal with for a lot of coaches, kind of setting their ways or whatever. And it's just going to have to happen, because it takes all the coaches that maybe in a Central District, we had this problem with some coaches would say, well, I don't like Olentangy. And I don't know why they wouldn't, but they would vote us 34th. And, you know, we were, you know, 20, around 20 team. And it takes all that kind of stuff out of it, and the human error. And I think it's going to be okay. Again, I like to watch where we were, and we knew where we were at before we even got to the draw, which is awesome. We can prepare a little bit for where we thought we would be able to go on the bracket. I will be a firm, staunch opponent to them ever putting us on the bracket like the NCAA does. Because I think that's part of the best thing about the draw day, is being able to seed yourself and find your matchup and find your little niche to try to get to the district semifinals or the district finals in Central District. And I think I would be against that, but I do like the seeding us in the RPI.
Coach, where does the OHSAA and the OHSBCA stand on the shot clock? There seems to be more conversations happening about it. But is there any real movement on potentially bringing the shot clock to Ohio?
Well, I'm pretty sure our coaches voted for it. I think that's all in the athletic director's and the principal's hands. Here at Olentangy, we really don't need one. We shoot it before we get it over half court and pretty much fire it up as fast as we can. But I think that I would love the shot clock for many different reasons. It's really, I think, much easier to sell the kids these days on playing defense for 30 seconds instead of playing defense for 2 minutes and trying to buckle down on a half court set, you know, and against somebody who just runs offense forever. I think we can do some stuff defensively and press and take some time off the clock, and it makes other people hurry their offense up a little bit. And I think the end of quarters and end of games will be a much different thing with a shot clock, because, I mean, down two with no shot clock with 2 minutes to go, down six with 2 minutes to go and with no shot clock, and it's tough sledding, and there's a lot of fouls and a lot of shooting free throws. But down six with 2 minutes to go, play good defense for 30 seconds, get a stop, get the ball back and score. It's a lot different. The end of games and end of quarters are going to look a lot different for the game. And I mean, again, they play with it in college. I think that we should be able to train our kids to play with it during the high school, and it'll help the game as they go along. Again, it's change, I know, and you won't be able to run, you know, flex for 3 or 4 minutes and be able to play in the 30s. But I've never been that coach anyway, so for us, I'd like to see it.
Finally, coach, and this is your opinion only, not on behalf of the OHSBCA with this next answer. How soon do you think it'll be until we see NIL in something similar to the transfer portal in high school basketball here in Ohio?
We don't have the transfer portal already. I think we do, don't we? I mean, that's but I don't know. The NIL is a weird thing for high school kids. I mean, I could understand them making some money. I'm not against it. I don't think that we're going to have like Ohio State and have a big pool of money that they're buying players with or something like that. I mean, I wouldn't be against a Cups making money on his TikTok, whatever they do. Or, I mean, it's above my social media grade that I know anything about. But I think a kid, if he can make money, should be able to do it. I mean, I don't know. But it opens a whole can of worms, and it's going to be, I would think that we're going to see it, because I would say somebody's going to take us to court and take Ohio High School to court about it, and it's going to be a big mess, and it's going to happen sooner or later. And the transfer portal, I think the same thing's going to happen. I think it's going to end up, we're going to see something like that where you can just go wherever school you want to go to. I would love to see it happen before, you know, your freshman year. You have to I don't want to see people playing at different schools every year. I mean, but it's going to be a different world. I had an administrator one time tell me, it was our superintendent, and he told me that in 20 years, we won't have high school sports. It'll be all club sports. And I think that the more we can try to move towards what they're doing in the college ranks or do, you know, make our game a little bit better, then hopefully we'll be able to keep high school sports, because I think high school sports are some of the best stuff that goes on. I think it's pure, and it's great to watch, and I've been in it most of my life. I think that if it goes away and it becomes club, it's just going to be it's not going to be fun to watch.
So, coach, kind of maybe moving off some of the more present day topics that we're dealing with as coaches here in Ohio, let's talk about you a little bit. Let's go back in time and talk a little bit about your father, John Senior. So he served as the head boys basketball coach at Fredericktown, Olentangy, and Groveport Madison. He won over 300 games in his career and is a member of the District 11 Hall of Fame. He had a tremendous amount of success at each one of his stops, with his first being Fredericktown, where you were a ball boy on the 1976 team that played in the regional final at the University of Dayton Arena. What do you remember about that experience, and was it then that you started to fall in love with the game of basketball?
Well, I was that little kid that sat at the end of the bench that was the ball boy. I almost drowned in Dayton. It was winter. It was a really cold spring, and there was water in the pool, but there was ice in it. And I fell in the pool, and my buddy pulled me out, and I saved my life. But because I was in the ice. I remember going to the Air Force Museum. It was a 3-day vacation, and we didn't take very many vacations in the Fiesel family, so that was pretty sweet. But it was something great for the Fredericktown community, and it was unbelievable. The district semifinals or finals. They were down like 9 with a minute and a half to go and end up winning the game. It was an unbelievable game. And those guys still to this day come to my games to sit with my dad. And watch our games, and they're, you know, I remember when I was a little guy, they'd pick on me a little bit, but you know, that's just given for the high school dudes. So, but no, it was a great time. Never made it to the state, but it was a great run. At Olentangy, playing for my dad, it was interesting. I only played till my sophomore year there. He was the winningest coach when he left Olentangy. And but he, you know, again, back in the day, Olentangy was a small farming community, and Groveport was a big division AAA team. It was a big school, and that was a step up for him. And my sophomore year, we left after my sophomore year and into my junior year at Groveport. It was tough, but I still have, you know, all my friends here at Olentangy. That's why I came back to Olentangy. All my friends that live here, and we still play golf every weekend and play, you know, do a lot of stuff. Our off guard is our announcer at the basketball games for us now, and we still have a tight knit group of guys who we all hang out still. And then at Groveport, you know, at Olentangy, I was okay. I was a pretty decent sophomore. And my dad takes a job, and he turned it down the first time because he didn't want to move me. And I told him, I said, well, it's your life. I mean, you go. If you think it's a better job, you take it. I'll go with you. It doesn't matter. So he takes a job, and then the next week we go over to visit Groveport, and he goes, now, I want to warn you, you may not make the basketball team here. And I was like, what? Excuse me? But we had a really good team. We had a really good group of juniors in my junior year, and then my senior year, we ended up winning the district, the only district in the history of Groveport, and going to the regional semis, and got beat by a really good Mansfield senior team that ended up state runner up by 3 points. You know, it was a great run and had a fantastic, you know, it was a good ending, but you know, just didn't get to the state. But again, not everybody gets to the state. It's something that everybody tries to get to, but not a lot of people make it there.
So coach, you know, we talked about your dad's three stops, and obviously it was mentioned before, won over 300 games, member of the Hall of Fame. What allowed him to experience the success he did as a basketball coach?
Well, he's a pretty smart guy. Still goes to every one of my games and tells me what I do wrong after every game. He's an old school guy. It's taken a couple years of convincing that three pointers are good things. He, you know, went over and saw him today, and he had yelled at me earlier because I didn't bring him the stats from this year. So I had to bring him the stats so he could go over the stats. He really, one thing about my dad, the way he coached, I try to do the same thing. It's not your system to fit the players. It's the players to fit the system. And if 1 year we were really good in the post, then we would throw the ball in the post every time. If, you know, the next year we were all guards, then we would press and run. It always, his systems always fit his teams. And that's kind of what I try to do. I mean, that's why in the 21 years I've coached, that's what I try to do. And it's not, sometimes it's not easy because you may graduate all your post players and you're going to run the next year. You know what I mean? And that's something that in the last couple of years we haven't had a post. So we've had to play a lot of guard oriented stuff. And, it's something that I believe in, and it's the way I coach, and something that he passed down. And again, he's all about player development too. Told me yesterday that one of the things I need to do is get plyometrics on those post players because they got to be able to jump better. So that's I was like, well, okay, all right, we're working on it. Again, he's old school, but you know, he's learning and he's changing along with the game.
All right, so coach, help us fill in the gap between your playing career and the start of your coaching career at Olentangy. You know, what type of experiences do you have in and around the game of basketball during those times?
When I got out of college, I got married, and I was working at a printing company, and I really missed basketball. About 10 years after working at the printing company, I started a magazine called Ohio Girls Basketball Magazine, and I went to a magazine shop, which, you know, there aren't very many of those anymore. Went to a magazine shop, and I was looking at doing the boys basketball magazine, and I was going through, and there was like three or four different boys basketball magazines for the state of Ohio, and I didn't see a girls basketball magazine. And me being the guy who likes to play against no competition, I just started something that nobody ever did. I was the first girls basketball magazine out there, and well, the only one for 10 years. And I had a couple buddies of mine that we grew the magazine. It it became, we had over 250 colleges that belonged to the magazine. Again, I would evaluate players not on, like, you know, this is Division One. I would just evaluate players at different levels of basketball players, smaller schools, bigger schools, whatever there were, but try to, you know, publicize the girls that maybe don't get seen as much, but also, you know, put the girls in there that are going to play at the Dukes and the UConns. And, you know, we had a Hall of Fame for it. We had Denny Schrock was in my Hall of Fame, and he's going in the Coaches Hall of Fame this year. Ed Zink was in my Hall of Fame, and Ed Zink went in the Hall of Fame last year for the Coaches Association. And it was kind of cool to do some stuff for the girls coaches that, you know, back then it was absolutely nothing. And we got to know a lot of players, got to know a lot of coaches. And as I was going around for those 10 years, you know, I started running some shootouts, and we had one of the biggest shootouts that was in the state of Ohio for the girls. Had over 64 teams in it here at Olentangy. And I was using Olentangy as our home base of operation. Got to know the AD pretty well. And he asked me to be on the committee to help hire the new girls coach when the job opened up at Olentangy. And I kept coming home to my wife, and she goes, "Well, what do you think?" And I go, "Well, you know, not bad." I had two daughters at the time. I thought maybe they'd play basketball when they got older, and wanted to make sure that the program was in good hands. And I said, "Well, I think I'm as good or better than any of these guys that are applying, or the guys or girls that are applying." And she goes, "Well, why don't you apply?" And I said, "Well, I'm not a basketball coach. I was an AU coach. I coached some different things, but never really." But then I pulled out my dad's interview packet stuff and put my own interview packet thing together and put in for the Olentangy job and got it. And I was wondering why it was open so long. It was mainly because we just split with Liberty, and there was four girls returning in the senior class, two girls in the junior class, one girl in the sophomore class, and eight freshmen in a Division I team. And 3-18 my first year. Great story for my dad. My dad went my first game. We're playing Otto Glandorf, the first game of my career. First game. I'm excited, and, you know, can't believe it. I'm up in Salina playing in the field house. It's, you know, it's boom. And my dad's sitting in the front row. He's watching, and we got beat by 40. It wasn't close. I was like, holy crap, what do I got myself into? My dad comes down and looks at me, and he goes, "Hey, you want some advice?" I said, "Well, yeah, I'd love some. We just got beat by 40. And he goes, "Well, you can get your butt kicked a lot closer to Columbus than this." And just walked out. And I was like, gee, many Christmas. We went 3-14, 3-18, 4-17, 5-16, 6-15. Worked my way one game a year for a while, but then got a good group of girls in there, and we end up winning 15 games. And after that, you know, had a pretty successful run in the girls program. But, you know, it was a weird route to how I got to coach, but I wouldn't trade it for anything. I now work in the school. I've worked at the school for like the last 18 years, and you know, have a good relationship with I'm the oldest tenured coach in the whole school, Olentangy school district. They call me old Coach Fiesel, but they call me old Coach Fiesel, but my dad got wind of that, and he said, "Well, they're going to call me winning Coach Fiesel, and they'll call you old Coach Fiesel." And I was like, "Yeah, thanks, buddy." That's how I got there.
So, Coach, let's focus on those first few years. I know you'd probably rather not, but let's talk about those first few years. What do you wish you would have known then that you know now? And what kind of advice would you maybe give to a coach that's kind of maybe walking into a situation that you walked into?
My daughter lives in Las Vegas. She's a middle school guidance counselor, and her girls' basketball team at their school is terrible. And she told me the other day, she said, their coach asked me to come watch practice and ask, it's a young girl that's coaching the team. And she said, anything she could help her with. And my daughter goes, "Well, my dad would tell you that you just need to do ball handling every day because your girls can't handle the ball." And if I could go back to myself back at the beginning, or if I could go back to anybody that's struggling, the basics, just go back and it may seem like you're just doing ball handling drills and passing drills and defensive drills forever. And it may not seem like you're going to get better, but it's getting you better. And it's it may take a while, but you're never going to win games if you're turning the ball over. It's something that you got to get girls who can actually, or guys who can actually play without turning over before you can get things going the other way. in your program. We had a game once against Thomas Worthington my first year, and my wife, she'd sit beside the bench and keep stats, and she's a pretty good stat keeper. And we had Nikki Kramer, who was the 2 years before that was playing point guard for Xavier, and she was playing UConn in the regional finals. 2 years removed, she's coaching on a 3-18 basketball team with fees. And my wife goes, we turned the ball over, and my wife goes, now we were down four with 4 minutes to go. My wife goes, that's 40. And Nikki goes, somebody has 40 points in this game? And I go, no, that's 40 turnovers. We had 40 turnovers. To this day, my guys on the basketball team, they know that I can't stand turnovers. And it's mostly because it's like PTSD, you know what I mean? I go back to my coaching the girls, and it just drives me insane. And they know that turnovers are, I'd rather see them chuck a shot from 38 feet than I would to turn it over. And sometimes they take advantage of me on that, but it's something that I think that until you get your program to where you can handle the ball and get shots up, then you're just never going to be successful until that happens. And that's why I would tell any young coach, you got to just keep pounding it, and then go to the youth and just keep pounding them on it. And then once those girls get up to it, because that's what we did, we went down in the third, fourth, fifth, and sixth grade and started working those girls out. They started getting up to the high school, and then all of a sudden we started rolling a little bit, you know what I mean, and not turning it over, and then had a successful program.
Yeah, so Coach, just to go through your resume a little bit, in your time there at the Olentangy girls program, you know, 13 years, you went over 175 games, 5 league championships, 7 sectional championships, district runner-up 5 times. You decide to switch things up a little bit and take over the boys program. I guess the question I have for you is why? The girls program was rolling at that point, was in a position to experience some sustained long-term success. You give that up for a program that was not quite at that same level. Take us through your decision-making process there.
Well, it was the toughest decision, one of the toughest decisions of my life. Had a lot of girls who I've known since, I mean, second, third grade, that I've coached since second, third grade, that were coming up through the program, and it was tough. But I talked to my wife, and I talked to kids, and it was something that I was 50 years old, 48 years old, or whatever I was, I can't remember, but I didn't think that I would want to change when I was 58 or 60. If I stayed, I was going to stay with the girls the whole time. And if I was going to make that change, I was going to have to do it then, because if I didn't, I was going to get too old to coach the boys, to start out coaching the boys. It was something, I played for the Braves. My dad coached for the Braves. I've been in Olentangy school district probably, you know, for a good majority of my life. And I know the people here, and I wanted the boys program to turn around and be one of the better programs in the central district. And, you know, and again, we had some good teams when I first took over. I mean, we had some decent talent. We split with Berlin when I was a boys coach. So that was another split with us that took half our talent. And I think that we've bounced back now and won our first league championship. And I think that we have some guys who understand what it takes to win championships. I don't know if we had that before. I know we had some guys who understood what it took and understood what level you had to commit and what level you had to be at, but I don't think we had a full program. I've had meetings with our players the last week and a half, you know, some end of the season meetings, and I think they all understand where we're at and what they want to achieve. And, you know, we set the bar pretty high now, and I think it was just it was the right time. We've had some success with the girls now. The girls, now that Jamie's taken back over, we have we had the number one team in the state. It's good to see the boys and the girls program win the league, and I hope that we can both win the district together, and just keep Olentangy as something that's one of the better teams in the central district.
Coach, before we go on, you said it twice, and just for our listeners who may not be familiar with your situation in Olentangy, you keep talking about the school district split. Can you tell our listeners kind of how Olentangy works in the evolution of that area and what's happened?
Well, we're the fastest growing school district in the state of Ohio, top 5 in the United States. Our district is, we went from one school at the Olentangy where I coach, and we've split with Liberty, and we split with Orange, Olentangy Orange, and we've split with Olentangy Berlin. And we had something on the ballot to split again to make the fifth high school. And every time we've split, they've always taken half of our talent. So they took half the talent, went to Liberty. They took half the talent when I was a girls coach. We split our team. We made it to the district semifinals, and we lost in our league twice to Orange, who were the girls who were in my middle school program that ended up going to the state final four. So we had two teams that were, one went to the state and the other one was one of the better teams in the state. We were ranked all year, I think, in the state. And, you know, those were both they would have been all of our girls if we didn't split. Again, and we with Berlin, we split and half our talent went to Berlin. And in our school district, we don't have, we have a rule we've added to in Olentangy. We don't go by Ohio High School. In Ohio High School, if a big school district like ours, we could have it where, as a freshman, you could say where you're going to school and it wouldn't cost you anything. It's like they do in Ohio, in Columbus, but in Columbus Public or Toledo. It's just an Olentangy rule. We made it so if you transfer schools, you sit out a year from sports. It takes away the kids don't transfer, and they certainly don't sell their house to move and play basketball at some other school in their own district. So it's pretty much you get what you get, and you coach up what you coach up. And it's a little bit more strict than any other school district in the state of Ohio. But I like it. And I tell you why, because if I work my butt off with some kid that's a third, fourth, fifth, and sixth grader that's in my program, and he gets up to high school and says, you know what, I'm going to go play at Liberty because, you know, my buddies from AAU are on that team, and they're, you know, I want to go play with them. My head would explode. You know, I guess that's where the transfer portal may kill me. But, you know, and I don't want to recruit kids from another school in Olentangy to come play for us. I don't want to have to do all that. It's just nice because we all play each other, and all of us coaches get along, and we're friendly, and we don't have to worry about, you know, kids going to another school or taking kids from another school. And it's pretty much, it's not Thunderdome up here, that's for sure. Now, does that kind of hurt? Because you'd like to get some other players or maybe get some kids to move in, but it doesn't happen very often in Olentangy School District. Now, the other thing is we're growing. And our school district and the people don't understand from around the state. It's like when my brother just had his youngest son just graduated from school. He had four kids that went through our school. And the day after they graduated, he put his house for sale. And, you know, in Olentangy, people sell their house to make a bunch of money and move somewhere else so they don't have to pay the taxes. And what happens is some guy from Cincinnati bought the house who got transferred up here and who has three young kids. We're restocking our kids right back into, you know, right back into the system. So we got three more kids at the net from that house that are going to our school. And then we're building houses. You can't believe how we're building houses up here. And this with the Johnstown area exploding, I think we're going to get a lot more people for the Intel plant and some of the other stuff that's going on. And it's one of the better school districts academically in the central district area. All four of our schools are ranked in the top 10 in the state of Ohio. I mean, it's a really good place to be.
Coach, wait, let me jump in here real quick, because I kind of want our listeners, like you talked about, that maybe might not quite have the idea of just how fast that area has exploded and grown. You talked about that split. How many years was it from the first, your high school, to building three high schools? Wasn't it something crazy like within 10 years or?
Yeah, 10 like years. That? We have 18 elementary schools and I think six or seven middle schools. It's crazy. And we want to build another school because we need it now, but because we want to stay in front of the wave. I don't think we didn't pass the levy. And I think some of the people here are like, well, what do we need in our school? We need another school because the wave of kids that are coming are going to put us in trailers at our schools and in our high schools. And it's overcrowded and, you know, it's going to get really bad, but, you know, and, you know, we'll put some portable trailers outside and do what we can when we get to that point. But I mean, There's so many kids. It's unbelievable. It would be unbelievable if we were one school district, with one school. We'd be like a Carmel, Indiana. I guarantee it. We would have an unbelievable swimming program because all four of our schools are good swimming programs. We'd have an unbelievable golf program because our golf programs are good. We'd have an unbelievable basketball program. I mean, we had three teams. Orange is one of the top teams in the state. And, Liberty's no slouch. They're really, really good. And then we weren't bad. We won the league. And then Berlin has a couple, we would be unbelievable. It would be so hard to make a team in our school district. And that's why they did this. And in the 83, when I went to school here, they were talking about this explosion that was going to happen in Delaware County. And nobody would believe it. It was all farmland. We had the FFA. We had, all the different stuff that the small farming school has. And people were like, no, what are you talking? Well, it's happened. And they wanted to break apart the school district so that people had more options to play. I mean, I think it's fantastic because you have more kids are able to play basketball. More kids are able to play football or any sport or whatever band. But it's also kind of hard because we're Division I in all of our schools. And down here in Columbus, that's not a place to be if you aren't you aren't loaded. So,
Coach, let's talk about your last 8 years as the boys coach at Olentangy. It's been a struggle at times to find the same success you did on the girls' side. Although this year you won your first league title since 1992 and first ever as a member of the OCC. And I can remember talking to you on the phone the next day and after you had won that title, and you just kept saying over and over and over again how special this was for your program. You know, how difficult of a rebuild has it been for you with the boys program? Since you've been there,
it's tough to sell giving yourself up for a championship to our kids. I talk about it all the time with our players. Tell them that we at Olentangy think that our basketball program or our baseball program or whatever program we have in the school district is like a ride at Cedar Point. And when you come to the high school, you get in line. And then, your sophomore year, you move up, and your junior year, you move up, and then senior year, you move up, and you get to get on the ride when you're a senior. And that's the varsity team. I keep telling them that it's not a ride. And some of you are going to get fast passes, and some of you are going to outwork others that are younger. The younger guys are going to outwork other guys that are older. And you're going to have to, it's going to be tough for you older kids. And I finally got to the point this year, we had no seniors. We had one senior that left early to go play football at UC and he played six games, but we had no seniors and we finally started to compete every day at practice, and we started to compete every day, every game. And it takes a lot to keep our guys focused on the picture. We lost two games towards the end of the season that I thought we had to have a meeting with the team because they thought that we were done. We thought we lost the league because we lost a game that we shouldn't have lost. And I had to have a meeting with them on a Saturday and say, listen, guys, the sun came up today and we're back at it, and we can win, and we can, if somebody can beat somebody, then we can have a chance to play for the championship game at Marysville. And things happen, and we end up playing in that championship game. Now that they've gotten the taste for it, and I think that's the biggest thing we had to do. We had to get to that. We had to get over the hump and get to the taste of a championship. And now I think they all understand that, hey, you know what? We can do this again. And if we work a little bit harder, we can be even better. And I think that the meetings I've had with the kids this last week and a half, a lot of them have set the bar high, and that's been hard for us because the bar has been just playing basketball at Olentangy, and that shouldn't ever be the bar. The bar should be winning championships at Olentangy as a team, and then winning the district, which should be the next bar, and then the next bar should be playing at the next level. And I think we have some kids who want to play at the next level who have set the bar high for themselves. And with that bar being set higher, it's making kids work a little bit harder to get to that bar. And I think that hopefully, we get some guys rolling the right way, and we get some, you know, get this program taken to the next level to where we can, you know, compete to win a district championship. Or, you know, we haven't done that since 1998. And then we were Division II when we did that. You know, we haven't done that in Division I yet. And it's, you know, hopefully we'll get to that point and, you know, keep raising that bar.
So, Coach, let's spend a little bit of time talking about your off-season program. I'd like for you to discuss what it looks like for all three levels of your program, from youth to middle school to high school.
Our youth program has, we have a thing called OYAA, and that's the Olin Tansy Youth Athletic Association. It's a good thing. It's, they have, OYAA travel teams, and then we have a rec program through there. We don't have to do much on that. I do a little bit more in our OYAA travel teams. We have, I actually just got a director of player personnel to help. We do a thing called, we have a practice for all the guys in that play in our travel system. We bring them in and we run them through practice, just doing fundamentals for an hour and a half each week. They have two practices, but as I tell the coaches in the OIA that, you know, you're working on man-to-man defense or working, trying to put a play in, or, you know, working on inbounds plays, and you really don't have a chance to do the fundamentals and the stuff that needs to be worked on. And I get that because they only get an hour, 15 minutes to practice. Two hour, 15 minute practices a week. What we do is we have an hour and a half skills and drills session. And we just come in for an hour and a half and do skills and drills for the third and fourth grade. And then they come in for an hour and a half and do the skills and drills for the fifth and sixth grade. You know, once we started doing that with the girls, it really started building the fundamental base that once they get to seventh and eighth grade, they should, you know, be able to do some certain things and understand what we're trying to do fundamentally wise. I mean, every kid in our program, I hope, I knock on wood, I say this, but if I say two ball handling, they all know what the heck's going on, and they all hit the baseline, get two balls, and they can all do two ball handling, moving and stationary, and left and right hand layups. And you know, I think that's a big thing. We push it a little bit higher as they go along during the season. You know, it's just a good fundamentally based thing. A lot of shooting, a lot of stuff, but working on their shots, working on good shots, working on game speed shots. And then hopefully by the time they're seventh and eighth grade, they know how to play basketball. Now, our eighth grade team has been through this 4 years of skills and drills and all that kind of stuff. They were 18-0, which is really good for, you know, down here in Columbus. You know, you get some really good middle school teams, and they're a really good class. I got like 16 guys coming in next year that are solid basketball players, and that's what you got to have. You got to have guys that, again, you bring them in. I told all of our guys, it's competition now. You know what I mean? We had 33 dudes on the basketball team. We didn't lose one guy. We're bringing 16 guys in. 16 of you aren't going to be here next year, and you don't want to be one of those guys. And so you got to work. If you don't work during the summer, they're going to pass you up, and you're not going to play basketball at Olin Tansy, which competition, you know, drives us to be better. And again, that's setting the bar higher. I guess making the bar higher, it makes making people work harder. And that's what we try to do in the youth programs. Our middle schools, you know, again, I'm a little bit crazy. I go to Eastern Ohio basketball camp with the middle school teams. I know all those kids. I've coached them. I go in, I'll coach them at 8 a.m, get to know them. They know Coach Fees by the time they're in high school. If they don't know Coach Fees, then there's a problem. Because I'm telling you right now, we get in the gym and we work. Our staff puts a lot of hours in. If you want opportunities, there's opportunities to get better. And taking advantage of those opportunities is the biggest thing. And that just leads to competition when it gets to high school, which is awesome. And that's what we need to have.
So, Coach, you've briefly alluded to it, but your schedule every year is just absolutely brutal. So more of a two-part question here. First, do you follow a general philosophy when it comes to filling out your schedule? And how do you go about preparing for opponents, both as a staff and then with your team?
First of all, I like to schedule games around places to eat. We went to Dover a couple years ago because I like to go to the barbecue place up there in Dover. And there's an ice cream place in Dover that I really like. I know Coach Von Kennel knows where it is. And my staff, they laugh. They go, "Fees, where we eating when we go play this games?" And I always have a little place where we can go eat. It's an experience for the kids. I think that playing, making my schedule, our schedule is going to be fine enough with our league teams. And then, you know, we play Liberty and Orange every year, which they're always good. So, I mean, right there, I've got 10 games that are really good, 12 games that are really good. I look for 8 opportunities for the kids to have fun. We're going to either go to Florida or we're going out west this year for 3 games for an experience. And again, we go through KSA down to Florida. We go for the experience. And my staff knows that when we go down to Universal, I'm making those kids get to the park and have a good experience. And we're gonna worry about basketball. And I want to win when we're down there. And I want to play, but we're gonna have an experience. Paul Wackerly from
Glen Oak.
Yeah, Glen Oak. Sorry, he used to be at North Canton Hoover. I've known Paul forever, and he's one of the guys I called when I first started traveling. And he said, "Fees, just make sure the girls or guys have fun when they're out there playing, and it's just not a you got them in the room by 8 because you need to sleep because you need to, let them have fun. You know what I mean? It's about the experience in high school, and that's what." Again, that's if it went to club basketball, this is about the experience of playing for your team, playing with your guys from your school, playing with friends and experiencing things. Like we went to Smithsville this year and we're going back to Smithsville next year. We're going to play North Canton Hoover up there. And Smithsville was an unbelievable experience. It was fun. They had that gym is awesome. And then they had great chocolate milk after the game. It was unbelievable. Again, the kids got to eat there and they loved it. I haven't had a trip up to Berlin yet or with the guys. I used to do it with the girls all the time. And, we go up there and eat and then play Berlin Highland and get better and play basketball and have fun. I tell you, same thing during the summer. We go around to shootouts and we go around to different places. And a lot of it's about, the experience. That's how I make my schedule up. I want to, be competitive and play at, competitive levels, but I also want the kids to have fun.
Well, Coach, you mentioned it. You talked about it, some of the trips you take. I know you have a great relationship with KSA. I know if I played in your program, I would love to be a part of it because I know at least once in my high school career, I'm going to be taking a trip to Florida or, like you said, out west. And you're kind of the spokesperson for KSA in the state of Ohio with as many trips as you went on with them. But, in order to do stuff like that, it takes money. I mean, let's be honest, in order to do nice things for your kids, to take them to Hog Heaven in New Philly after playing in Dover, maybe take them to Softies in Dover or something like that, it takes money. So let's talk about fundraising a little bit. What types of fundraisers are you doing in your program? And more specifically, what have been the most successful fundraisers that maybe other programs could try to duplicate?
What haven't we done to fundraise is what I want to know. It takes money. I was talking to the Coronado coach from Las Vegas last weekend. I was in Las Vegas with seeing my daughters. The Coronado coach is a Nike school. And I was asking him about tournaments out west because I was thinking about going out west to a tournament. And, he's trying to sell me on going to out in California to this tournament. And he goes, the flights are expensive and the hotels. I got to pay for all that. And he goes, oh, yeah, I keep forgetting I'm a Nike school. They pay for everything for me. And I was like, yeah. I don't have 3 guys in the NBA right now. Some other dudes that played Division I basketball. Yeah. It takes fundraising. It's, KSA is great because I'll give it a little KSA plug right now. KSA is great because I don't have to worry about one thing. They fly me down there. They take care of my shuttles to and from the games. They take care of all the games. They take care of it, all the passes. They hand me all the stuff and I don't have to worry about anything. And that's one thing I love about that place. It's expensive. Anything's expensive these days to going anywhere you go. Again, we're going to run a basketball tournament next weekend. We're blessed with some pretty good facilities and tournaments come and run stuff. And we make money on a weekend for a tournament. We'll do that. We do fundraising. You has been awesome for us. I know that's another coach association hookup. I originally got to know them because they give that free popcorn at the clinic and I kept eating it. The whole time. And then last year we sold popcorn, which we made some pretty good money on that. We just, a lot of, we're blessed with OIA gives us money to help help them make the teams and help them do some evaluating of players. And we get some money off that. And we have a great group of parents who love to travel with the team and have fun. So they're great about fundraising. You got to have a parent group that wants to do stuff and wants our kids to have a good experience. So fundraising, I tell you what, if you're a young coach and you're looking at stuff, it's probably got to be the worst thing you look at. It's because it's the hardest thing to do. And it's also the thing that you need to do the most. That's why I was thinking about, you know, this NIL thing could really work out, because if coaches could do NIL, I could sell like patches for my shirt, you know what I mean? And maybe fundraise for the team, you know, with a steakhouse or whatever, you know, on the back, or, you know, I just have like, I look like a NASCAR coach, you know what I'm saying?
Ricky Bobby did it, right? And Talladega Nights. Exactly. Yeah. Get something on each sleeve, maybe on your back.
On here. I mean, yeah. I could sell different parts of my
walking
shirt.
Billboards.
Exactly. And but I don't maybe we could do that, but I mean, you just got to keep, I'd do anything, any new ideas. Heck, one year with the girls, we had a garage sale. So we had all the girls that were going to Florida, they bring stuff from their house that they want to sell. And we had a huge garage sale during this time in my neighborhood. They have a huge garage sale weekend. And we had this garage sale. We raised like $3,000 just on stuff off the garage sale. Somebody selling their junk. So always raising money. And you're always looking like we're hosting a tournament this weekend. And we'll probably host another tournament coming up as much as we can. And then because that's what we do.
You know, Coach, I've known you for quite some time. So, you know, I feel comfortable asking you this question, but you know, as a coach, one thing that's bothered me in the 11 years that I was a head coach is the fact that I've been unable to advance any of my teams out of the district tournament and into regional play and beyond. I personally feel as though I had a couple of teams that probably should have, but didn't. And in your 21 years as a head coach, you know, you've won 8 sectional championships. You made it to the district title game 5 times, but you've never advanced any further And in the Central District, I understand it's hard to do. Does it bother you? And do you feel as though if today was your last day as a head coach, you retired today, do you feel that your coaching career would be incomplete because you haven't been able to get to that next step in regards to regional play and beyond?
You know, I, my dad never made it to the state. He made it to the regionals a couple of times, and I think he was a really good coach. I mean, I think there's a lot of really good coaches that don't get past certain levels. You know, I don't know if that's how you should base your career on. I mean, I do think that we've had the buzzer beaters on district final games. That's just the worst. And we've had some district final games where we're just happy to get to the district finals and got our butt kicked. And then, but it's in, and especially in the Central District, you know, the year before I took the boys' job, I went to the boys' district finals and I watched, and every team that was in the district finals had a guy going to the Big Ten on their team. And then the one team that didn't, that was Upper Arlington. They had a guy going to Notre Dame. So it's rare air up there when you get to the district finals, and it's tough. And it's in the team that gets out of the Central District that gets to the Delaware Hayes. Delaware Hayes is really good. We played Delaware Hayes. I mean, that's one of our, you know, we played Delaware because they're right beside us. They were unbelievable this year. And, you know, they came a couple points away from winning the state because they almost beat the St. Iggy in the semifinals. It's tough. And do I want to get there? Yeah. But, and do I think that do I think it's going to happen? I hope it does. I'm going to try. I'm going to really try. But if it didn't happen, if I would have hit that Powerball yesterday, I mean, and I retired today, and I would have, I probably could have lived without, you know, getting to the regionals in the state, you know, and thought I did okay. I have some really good relationships with the girls players I've had, and, you know, I've been to many weddings and many, many times, and you know, they've had kids, and, you know, they bring their kids around, and it's great. And one of my best boys basketball players just got done playing college, and came back, and he's now my offensive coordinator now, and you know, he wants to be a part of the program. You know, it's stuff like that. That's more to me. That's more important than the wins and losses, because, well, you know, when it's done, I'm going to tell you right now, I have a lot of losses. I mean, I do. I have a lot of wins, but I have a lot of losses, and it's tough. Again, we're going to be, when the new stuff comes out, we're probably going to be the bottom five or six teams in the Division One, and that's not the place to be. But it's, you know, again, it's a challenge, and you know, we're going to try to get better and meet that challenge and go forward, and you know, hopefully we get some guys. I got a really good group of guys, and they want to compete and they want to win. A couple of their guys on our team last year said this week is their goals is to win one or two games in a tournament. Well, one or two games in a tournament starting next year is going to be the regionals. So it's going to be something special if we got that far. You know, being vice president, it's some perks. You know, one of the perks is I get one of those all floor passes to the state, and went around, and you know, there's like three or four guys who I really, really know, the Delaware Hayes coach, and the Maysville coach, and some other coaches that I'm friends with, and I know them really well. And I went and talked to them, and I said, listen, I know two of them were first time guys in the state, and Coach V at Delaware, and then Coach Brown at Maysville. I just said to him, you know, Coach Brown looked like he was white as a ghost, and I said, hey, dude, have fun. There's like 800 coaches that would love to be right here, right now. And I tell you what, you guys better pray to God I get to the state finals, because it'll be something fun to watch.
All right, Coach Fees, now we'd like to transition to a segment we call Triple Threat. We're going to give you three topics and let you share your thoughts, ideas, experiences, and or suggestions with our listeners. Are you ready?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Number one. Top three restaurants of choice in the Lewis Center and surrounding areas.
I tell you what, I picked three that they're my go-tos. If I, you know, depends on what I want to eat. You know what I mean? And as a fat guy, I like to eat a lot. If I want prime rib, the Central Ohio area or the Lewis Center area, and Adam, I've told you about this place because you were staying down there, down here in Polaris one time. I said, go to Firebirds and get the prime rib. I'm telling you right now, you cannot beat Firebird's prime rib. It's probably on Polaris. It's one of the best priced prime rib, and it is always good. I mean, you can go to Mitchell's and all those other things. They're going to charge you $1 million, and this place is down to earth, and it's really good stuff. You go on pizza, you got to go to Cheshire Market for two reasons. One is they have their pizza is unbelievable. And the other reason is the owner is an old Tangy Brave basketball player from the 70s who I've known for most of my life. And Larry Klein is always good to the program, and he's always good to me. The other day, he got hit by a tornado when that tornado came through, and I called him. I made sure I called him to make sure everybody's okay. And he goes, yeah, everybody's okay, Johnny. And I go, what happened? He goes, well, I blew down the chimney, and it also blew off some of the roof. And I go, well, is everything all right? He goes, yeah, we'll get it fixed. And, you know, everything will be good. And I said, well, how are the pizza ovens? And he goes, they're fine. And, you know, I was worried about the pizza ovens mostly. And if I want to go to Mexican, there's a little place around the corner here called Senior Antonio's that I tell you what, that's for the money, you cannot beat it. And they have the big burritos, and it's really good stuff. And it's a short drive from my house to there. And it's a place we go. My wife and I like to go maybe once every 2 weeks. It's a good place to be.
So, Coach, I know basketball is a passion of yours, and obviously you're a foodie, and food's a passion of yours, but I know another passion and hobby you have is golfing. So what I want to know is, what's the best course you've ever played? And then give us a bucket list course.
Well, I've been blessed with meeting a lot of people, and I'm an old Tangy, and it's not a poor community. I tell you that right now. So a lot of people in my community, and there's a lot of nice golf courses, but I got to know the head greenskeeper at Muirfield and the village, so where they play the tournament. And the head greenskeeper is a basketball coach from Chardon, Chad Mark. And he has been really good to me. Takes me out there about once a year, lets me get my butt handed to me on a platter. And then, but it's one of the best experiences that you can have. The amenities, the places that, the course is unbelievable. One of my best friends also belongs there. So he takes me out about once a year. So I get to play Murrayfield a couple times a year, which is awesome. I played Scioto, which is probably, if you like, old school golf, you know, it's where Jack Nicklaus learned how to play golf. And it's one of the best old school golf courses, I think, in the state. And then Double Eagle is one of the most private courses in the state of Ohio, if not America. There's only about 60 members. And I was able to play there a couple times. It's pretty elite. So I've been blessed to be able to play some very nice golf courses around here and around Central Ohio. I have a bucket list. I really want to play Firestone someday. And I like to play all in Toledo. There's a really nice golf course out there too. And there's a couple places I'd like to play in the future. But, you know, as my friends call me, I got some friends who all belong at country clubs. One of my assistant coaches belongs at a country club. My friends belong down in South Carolina, down North Carolina in a country club. And they call me America's guest. So I go anywhere, play with anybody, anytime. And I like to be America's guest. It's I belong nowhere, but play anywhere. So that's pretty much it.
And you don't have to pay all the fees.
Yeah, well, you wouldn't want to pay all those, you know, those silly, you know,
initiation fees.
Initiation fees.
Member fees. Yeah.
No, fees. Yeah. I am off. Unless it's for the fees, I don't think I want to pay any fees. That's the thing. That's my one buddy belongs at Medallion down the road, and he's like, "Oh, come on, fees join. It's just $20,000 initiation." I'm like, "Dude, what do you think basketball coaches make? I'm not the Ohio State basketball coach. I'm the Olentangy basketball coach."
All right, Coach. Third topic: Michael Jordan or LeBron James, and why?
Well, first of all, this is not a podcast that has my picture. I'm in my office right now. There's
I see MJ's behind you. I see him.
There's about 1,000 MJ posters. I've got MJ is my man. I was fortunate enough to grow up when I was a senior in high school. We wore the first Jordans. Groveport was black and red, and we wore the first Jordans for our team shoe. And I've been fortunate enough to see Michael play. I saw him score his 63 points at the Cavs. Got to see that. I watched him play in Chicago Stadium when they played the Pistons, when they got in a huge fight. Lambeer and all them got in a big fight with Oakley. I was at that game. I was fortunate enough to be there. I personally think that it's him, and then. And I think LeBron's great. I think he's very good. I mean, I think, you know, he's an unbelievable athlete. I think he's a man among boys still, which he's how old he is. It's unbelievable how well he still plays. But to me, you know, Michael not only would win every time, that he would take people's hearts. And it was a different kind of basketball that he played.
Well, Coach, we got one more question for you. But before we get to that, we want to thank you for coming on the show tonight, spending some time with us on the Holding Court podcast. You know, I've always enjoyed our conversations together. I always laugh when we talk, and you're just a great person, to be around. We have a tremendous amount of respect for you. And, you know, I know I've enjoyed sitting here talking with you, and I'm sure our listeners have enjoyed it as well.
Oh, well, thank you.
Well, Coach, being a coach right now in today's climate, it's challenging to say the least. The turnover in coaches seems to be higher each year as the demands and stress of the job continues to increase. Kids are more challenging to coach. Parents seem tougher to manage. And that leadership and support at the building and district level at times can be inconsistent. You know, as a leader within the Ohio High School Basketball Coaches Association, what can be done to not only attract, but retain high quality coaches that understand the importance of education-based athletics and the impact that a coach can have in a young person's life?
Well, I'll tell you what, coaching's not for the faint of heart. I tell you, that's it's something that it's changed over the years. Now, when my dad coached, it was a different, different things were problems, and it varies from, I think, small school athletics to big school athletics. I was talking to a coach the other day that I know that was interviewing for a job. And he said if he makes it to the next round of the interviews, the superintendent's in the interview. And I started laughing. He goes, what are you laughing about? I go, well, our superintendent doesn't even, there's no way he would ever come to the high school basketball coach's interview. You know what I mean? It's four school. He's over four. They don't, the sports is ran by other people. You know what I mean? And it's, but it's for the smaller schools. I understand. And it's, you know, there are some guys who are superintendents, you know, and athletic directors and head girls basketball coaches all at one time. And it's something that, it's a lot different. I know it is a lot different, but I think we have to, you know, I'm trying, I have three young guys who are on my staff right now, and they're just out of college 2 or 3 years. And I try to mentor them as much as possible. I know Sean, the player that played for me, you know, we talk a lot. I'm blessed to have a couple older guys and Coach Holly and Coach Shemp with me, that we can mentor the younger guys, because the younger guys, you know, they're ready to go and they're wanting to coach them. And they, you know, oh, you want to do this? I go, well, guys, we can't do this because this will happen. You know, I've seen it, I've done it, I've been there, and we don't want to do that. But if we kind of do this, we can get that done without, you know, breaking everything else up. And I think there needs to be more coaches that want to coach at the, you know what I mean, as the assistant coach and as a freshman coach and as the eighth grade coach and as the seventh grade coach, and work their way up. And I think a lot of guys just want to go and be the head coach, which I know I was, but I'm kind of a different guy because I spent most of my life in coaching, you know what I mean? My dad, from when I was on the end of the bench as a, you know, little kid to when I was on the bench as a player and after I graduated, my dad would have me go scout and do some stuff and work with the program. And I've been in coaching for a while, but without even being a, you know, head coach. But I think our association is doing some great stuff. I mean, the 28.5 thing for the girls basketball is going to be great. I think we got to get more girls or females into the coaching, but I think that they've got to learn. They need things to talk to other coaches, you know what I mean? To see what's going on. You know, I don't have a huge coaching tree, but I have some players that played for me that are coaching. And I also have some coaches that coached underneath me that are at different places that were at different places. And I think that, you know, try to mentoring the young coaches is the best we can is the biggest thing we need to do.
Thanks for listening to Holding Court, presented by the Ohio High School Basketball Coaches Association. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. In the meantime, keep up with us on Twitter and Facebook at OhioBKCoaches, on Instagram at OHSBCA1947, and online at www.oh.nhsbca.org. Until next time.